Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, this is your boy, the icon of Tornado, Tony Panicow.
We have a very interesting show tonight. We have former boxing referee Richard Steele, who's been doing a lot of marketing and promotion in the mixed martial arts business these days. Also, we have former pro wrestler Diamond Dallas Page, who just started a new program called DDP Yoga. And if you go to ddpyoga.com, you can find out more about that. It's like there's a lot of success stories. He's helped out. And it's pretty intense stuff, but he's going to be talking about everything. His wrestling career and this new venture that he's got going on. Other than that, we got a lot of MMA boxing news to cover. First off, I wanted to recap UFC 144. We had the lightweight title change hands. Frankie Edgar finally got beat for the second time. Had a rough fight, all five rounds against Benson Henderson. Benson goes to 16-2. Edgar falls to 14-2 with one draw. And it was a real war. It was, I think, in the third round or so, there was an upkick that landed to Edgar's nose and pretty much split it wide open. He was bleeding a lot. So I think that was really the turning point of the fight. Edgar just couldn't do much. You know, he was pretty much affected mostly by the size difference. Henderson is one of those guys that's muscular and built, but doesn't carry as much weight for some reason. He's able to get down to that weight, and he looks like he's two weight classes above, but he's same weight as Edgar, and now they're talking about trying to get Edgar to move down a weight class. He's one of those guys that cut weight. He just kind of walks around at his fight weight. So we'll see what happens there, but Edgar's title run is over. And now their title match between Benson Henderson and Anthony Pettis. They were both on the same card here. Pettis was made famous, I guess, by the kick they called the Showtime Kick. And he took it right out of a martial arts movie where he jumped off the side of the cage and kicked Henderson in the face. And it didn't knock him out, but knocked him down pretty hard. And now they're talking about a rematch, but we'll see. Also, Ryan Bader beat Quentin Jackson, Rampage, by unanimous decision. They had Mark Hunt TKO'd Czech Congo. Jake Shields beat Yoshihiro Akiyama by unanimous decision. Tim Boach had a real crazy comeback against Yushin Okami. Hit him with a nasty uppercut against the cage and followed it up with a few more shots and knocked out Yushin Okami in the third round in a fight he was losing. Then we had Hatsu Hayoki versus Bart Polaszewski. Unanimous decision win for Hayoki. Pettis knocked out Joe Lazon.
That's my friend Mike's boy.
Yeah, for the first time in a long time. Joe got beat down pretty badly there.
Hey, Rich, listen, do me a favor, man. I got to reboot my phone. I'm having a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
Give me about 1 minute and call me back. So just keep doing your recap and just give me a call in about 1 minute.
Okay.
Okay.
So Joey, the hometown kid that we had on the show a while ago, years ago probably now, he didn't have a good night over in Japan. We also had Takanori Gomi beat Eiji Mitsuoka by TKO in the second round. Von Lee beat Norifumi Yamamoto by armbar submission at the end of the first round. Ricky Fukuda beat Steve Cantwell by unanimous decision. Chris Carriasso beat Takeya Mizugaki by unanimous decision. Issei Tamura beat Tiquan Zhang by knockout punch. And that was one of the ones that they showed at the end of the regular broadcast. And it was a pretty vicious knockout. One of the best punches I've seen in a while. It was a pretty good card overall. Nice to see the UFC back in Japan for the first time in forever. And basically, it was the same as any American card except for the crowd. The crowd was really kind of quiet. It's a different mentality over there, I guess. The fans are a little bit more respectful when the actions are going on, when the action is going on in the cage. So they're generally much more subdued than an American crowd that's cheering and jeering through the whole thing. But that's UFC 144. And, of course, we have two big events coming up this weekend. UFC on FX2 and Strikeforce from Columbus, Ohio, featuring a much-anticipated women's fight between Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey, Rowdy Ronda. Miesha is 12-2, Ronda is 4-0. So let's get Tony on the line here. Again.
Before we go any further, I just got a very special text while I was rebooting my phone. Just got a very special text message that we have a couple listeners tonight that I got to give a shout out to on the air, and which is actually going to perfectly segue into me to my next story. First, I got to do a voice imitation for one of them. So I got to say hi to the Kit Kat, and I also got to say hi to the Ham Bone. So Kit Kat and Hambone, thanks for checking in tonight. And Kit Kat is one of my colleagues who gets to put up with me for 40 hours a week when I'm such a pleasant, sunshiny individual. But on the funny side of it, I get a contract at work last week, and it's for Larry Holmes' business up in Eastern PA, which is the area that we cover. So we're doing his business, which has like the restaurant in it and a like small office building. We also got Larry Holmes' house. We're doing the extermination there, which is kind of cool. So now the technician that's unfortunately doing this is a guy we call by the name of Warm and Fuzzy because he's such a sunshiny individual, actually makes me look like a nice person. I'd like to say, man, if you could meet Larry Holmes, give him my card. And don't, whatever you do not mention the only meeting that Larry Holmes and I've had, which is when I went there wearing a Rocky Marciano T-shirt, not knowing that I was going to get my picture with Larry Holmes. He's in the picture, like, snarling, like, you got to be kidding me. So that was kind of cool, so I wanted to segue into that. Also, Rich, before we get our guests on tonight, did you happen to catch any of the fights on TV last week, the boxing matches?
I didn't watch anything. I think I caught maybe 5 minutes of Friday night fights. That's about it, unfortunately.
Actually, it was the fights on Saturday that I had a chance to watch. One fight that was very impressive was the Povetkin-Marco Huck fight from over in Germany. A lot of people thought Huck won that fight. It was
close to call. I mean, he had Pavetkin hurt in the final rounds. I mean, he hit him with a shot like right as the final bell was ringing, and Pavetkin was doing the Texas two-step. He was wobbling back and forth, and but Pavetkin got the decision, keeps his undefeated record intact. But Huxley moving up in weight really, you know, gave a good account of himself. And then on the other hand, the other fight wasn't as good. It was Nathan Cleverley against Tommy Carpenti. And Carpenti, not a bad southpaw fighter out of Virginia, actually has a win over Chuck Masaccio by unanimous decision. Carpenti, he put literally almost no effort in there. And he was in full retreat mode by the third round. And the whole question was, would Cleverley impressively score a knockout win, which he could not. But that was about it. You know, nothing really earth-shattering there. I'm trying to remember what else that we had on this weekend. They had a fight card in Atlantic City I was unable to attend. But a friend of mine, Garrett Wilson, who had just beaten Chuck a few months ago down in Atlantic City, he fought a guy by the name of Pedro Martinez. And no, not the former Boston Red Sox and Philadelphia Phillies pitcher. It's a cruiserweight by the name of Pedro Martinez. And if Garrett Wilson, if I would have been managing him for this fight, I would have told him to wear a shirt in the ring. He says, "Who's your daddy?" Because apparently that's what he was. I mean, Garrett busted up Martinez pretty good, knocked him down in the third round. I believe he broke his nose and forced a stoppage in the fourth round. Also, a fight card in Chester, Pennsylvania, right in the Philadelphia suburbs this weekend, and Wolfman did not have a chance to go. That was in the main event. Omar Sheikha, a former world title challenger, he actually took on Tony Ferrante, who we've spoken about several times in the show. He was a rival of my old friend Simon Carr, and also a guy that fought the aforementioned Chuck Masaccio. Chucky worked his corner for the fight. Because when I saw Chuck a couple weeks ago, he was like, "Hey, you coming to the fight in Chester?" I'm like, "I don't think I can, man. You know, I got, you know, things going on that weekend." He goes, "Yeah, Sheikha's fighting Ferrante, and if Sheikha wins," he goes, I might fight him." And I'm like, "Okay." And then he goes, "And I'm working Tony's corner." I'm like, "Well, then Chuck, why don't you just have him tank the fight so you can get the bigger fight?" But they said the fight was, that's what I was thinking, you know. But the fight was close. You know, two judges had it kind of lopsided in Sheikha's favor, but the third judge, I think, had it by like maybe 1 or 2 points in Sheikha's favor. I got to talk to Chucky because his fight with Sheikha might be on the Hopkins-Dawson undercard in Atlantic City. And if so, if I get tickets for that one, I'm going to want to get them from Chucky so I can get, you know, the really good seats. You know, instead of being up in the nosebleeds, you know, so sit there watching with a telescope. Mm-hmm. But no, that's really about all I saw or followed this weekend. The Huck Pavetkin fight was great. Cleverley Carpenti, not so much. And you know, but anyway, anytime you get fights on TV. Especially in the evening, I think this was like on Epix, which is some kind of cable channel that I don't know how I have, but I do. Shit, put a fight on any channel. Me and my dad, we watch fights on the Spanish channel sometimes. Can't understand the damn words they're saying, but we like them.
Yeah, you learn some Spanish that way, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, the only Spanish I know is like, but I actually took a couple semesters of Italian, and I still learned nothing. Except I learned all the bad words, and those I learned from my grandmother when I was about 5.
Yeah. Well, we do have a ton of MMA this weekend. We got a Strikeforce event and a UFC event on the same night, which doesn't make much sense to me since they're not competitors anymore. Even though one fight card is in Australia, and the other is in Columbus, so maybe they'll be staggered. And I did read a report from Sherdog that said they're going to start reporting at 5:30 Eastern time. So maybe the card is going to actually be earlier in the night, and then Strikeforce would be later. But Sherdog, as much as they
go out of the way to, you know, put the news out and describe the fights. For some reason, they don't have a time on their page of when the fight is going to be. It's got the date, the place, but no time. It's got everybody's record, who's fighting who, but no time when it starts. I don't know why they would do that. But anyway, the headliner of the Strikeforce event is going to be Miesha Tate and Rowdy Ronda Rousey, who's really been making...
She's going to do Rowdy Piper.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
She's been making a lot of noise, I guess you could say, in the female mixed martial arts circuit. Sorno. Tate is 12-2. We also have Ronaldo Souza, 14-3, versus Bristol Marunde, who's 12-6. We got Paul Daly back again, who's 29-11-2, fighting Kazuo Misaki, who's 24-11-2. We got KJ Nunes, 11-4, versus Josh Thompson, 18-4. Scott Smith is back, 17-9, versus Lumumba Sayers, who we've had on the show before, not too long ago.
I remember that.
Sarah Kaufman is another female mixed martial arts star that's been performing really well under the Strikeforce banner. She's 14-1. She'll be fighting Alexis Davis, who's 11-4. And that might be a better fight than the main event. I hate to say it, but it probably will be. Anyway, I also have Carlos, C-A-R-O-S, Noel, Fodor, who's 7-1, fighting Pat Heap, 16-0. And another former guest of mine that I did a little YouTube interview with, Ryan Couture, son of Randy. He's 3-1 now in MMA. He's fighting Connor Hume, who's 9-4. Then we have Roger Bowling, who's 10-2, versus Brandon Saling, who's 8-5. And that does it for the Strikeforce card. And we also have another UFC card on FX, UFC on FX2. It's kind of weird because, you know, the Fox deal, you've got FX and you've got Fuel as part of those deals now. Most people, they'll get Fox and FX, but Fuel is like one of those channels that's not in every cable package. And I don't think I have that. I haven't seen it on the basic cable anyway. But as soon as my computer starts cooperating here, we'll get to that. I know it's Thiago Alves versus Martin Kampmann in the main event. And as I mentioned, that's going to be from Australia, Sydney, Australia. So it should be a little bit earlier in the night. There we go. While we're waiting for that, I did find out this past week that they decided on some punishment for... Derek Chisora is going to be indefinitely banned from the sport of boxing.
And he
has to go through anger management.
You know what? I don't know how good of an idea that really is. I mean, obviously very controversial. He slapped Vitaly Klitschko with the white end. And then, you know, we started the fight with David Haye. He spit on Vladimir Klitschko. He's got people talking about the heavyweights for the first time in how long. For the first time in how long, he's got people saying, he's got people not saying, boy, the heavyweights suck. There is no good heavyweight. There's no interesting heavyweights. I'm not very interested in the next Mike Tyson or Muhammad Ali. Not even close. But you know what? People pay to see him get his ass knocked out. People will pay to see him fight David Haye on who's got the bigger mouth and who can back it up better.
people will pay to see him fight Vladimir Klitschko to see if Vladimir can knock him out. You know, and since the fight was close enough last time, and even though Vitaly legitimately hurt his shoulder, I think people would pay to see a rematch just because of the fact that their first fight was competitive, and there's some animosity there. I don't think, you know, Rich, let's put this point out there. From there being some bad boys in the UFC, did that hurt or help their popularity? I mean, even if like you get a guy on there you absolutely hate, you want to see him get his ass knocked out.
Yeah, Chael Sonnen, perfect example.
Exactly. What was the guy that we interviewed the one time? The first interview I did on the show, Wes Sims. Yeah. People wanted to see him get beat, you know? I'll tell you, Rich, I think you know me long enough doing the show. Name a fighter, past or present, that you know I can't stand. Boxer.
A boxer.
A boxer.
I'm going to blank.
Remember when you first started, using me as a co-host 4 years ago, and I told you...
Sorry for the little delay there, folks. I don't know what the problem was there. Usually it's on our end, but I think it was on Blog Talk Radio's end at that time. Get a little disconnect. Let's get Tony back on. And while we were disconnected, I had a thought. And I think I know. Only hates. So.
You.
Hey, you were back. And I, while we were disconnected, I thought of a boxer you definitely hate. Hector Mato Camacho.
Thank you. Exactly. Because how many times have I said, if you ever booked him, I wasn't doing the show?
Yeah.
And he was a fighter, and I can't tell you how many times in the late 80s and through the 90s I watched him in the hopes of him getting his ass kicked. And I remember my birthday, I forget if it was 1991 or 1992, thinking it was 92, is when he fought Julio Cesar Chavez, Sr. And they fought on September 12th, the night before my birthday. It was Saturday night. My birthday was on Sunday. And Chavez kicked the crap out of him. I mean, kicked his ass. And I was like, yeah, Chavez gave me a birthday present. He kicked Camacho's ass. A couple of years later, the night of my 21st birthday, September 13th, 1997, was when Oscar De La Hoya kicked the shit out of him. I'm like, once again, another birthday present. Watch him get his ass kicked. But as I was saying about Derek Chisora, you get certain fighters that, you know, part of their selling ability is the fact that you want to see him get beat. How many guys love Floyd Mayweather? There's a lot of guys out there that love him. How many people hate him? So you're going to get the best of both worlds when he fights. Now, when he fights Miguel Cotto in May, you're going to have a hell of a buy rate on that fight because you're going to have the Mayweather lovers. They want to watch Mayweather. They love him. You're going to have a lot of the Puerto Ricans that love Cotto. And then you're just going to have the people that hate Mayweather and hope that Cotto kicks the shit out of them. So that night, and that night only, they're going to be donning the Puerto Rican flag in the hopes of watching Cotto bust them up. In fact, I'm still waiting for my offer to work Cotto's corner in that fight. Had my boss believing it at work the other week.
Well,
we
have to get some news on that front this week. Apparently, Floyd wants to have 8-ounce gloves for that fight.
8-ounce gloves?
Apparently, he seems to want to take him out quickly, and the speculation is that he doesn't want to go to prison all beat up, you know, because that'll make him more of a target. These beat-up gloves. Now, I don't know if that's the real reason.
You know what? Honestly, I would see the smaller gloves being more of an advantage to Cotto. He is more of the puncher. I mean, Mayweather's fast as it is, so the extra 2 ounces is not really going to make that much difference. But the less padding, for two reasons. Number one, Cotto's a heavier puncher, and Mayweather has notoriously had brittle hands. I would see him fighting for, like, if it was a fight that had the potential of being 10-ounce or 8-ounce gloves, I could see him fighting for the heavier gloves, the 10-ounce gloves. Kind of surprising to me. You wouldn't want to give a heavier puncher any more of an advantage.
Right.
What's the next thing you're going to ask for? A 16-foot ring? Or, like, a double layer of padding?
Yeah.
You know, which is better for a puncher because they can dig their toes into the canvas a little bit better? I don't know. That doesn't make sense. I think he's bluffing.
Well, either way, it's going to be a good fight. But anyway, we've got to finish wrapping up this UFC card. I got the screen up here. We got main event, Thiago Alves versus Martin Campman. Alves is 19-8. Campman is 18-5. Then we got Joseph Benavidez, who's 15-2, fighting Yoshihiro Yurushitani, who is 19-4-6. And then Ian McCall, 11-2, fighting Demetrius Johnson, 14-2. Court McGee, 14-1, fighting Konstantinos Filippou, 9-2. James Tehuna, 13-5, fighting Aaron Rosa, 17-4. Anthony Perosh, who's 12-6, fighting Nick Penner, 11-1. Cole Miller, 18-5, fighting Steven Seiler, who's 19-9. Andrew Craig, 6-0, fighting Kyle Noak, 19-5-1. We got TJ Waldberger, 14-6, fighting Jake Hecht, and he's 11-2. Daniel Pineda, 16-7, fighting Mackenzie Samerzier, who's 6-3. And finally, Odie Thompson, 9-2, fighting Sean Jordan, 12-3. And I just wanted to cover a couple other quick MMA stories before we get Richard Steele on the phone here. Story from Chandler, Arizona. Police arrested a Phoenix man on suspicion of using mixed martial arts moves he learned on television to beat his girlfriend, Black and Blue, and then choke her to unconsciousness because she was disrespecting him. The victim sustained a broken nose and a black eye and was beaten in front of her 3 children. She told officers that her attacker took her cell phone and then tried to strangle her by twisting her shirt around her neck, causing her to stumble over the living room couch. Then he sat on top of her, choked her with his hand, and punched her several times in the face, causing a bloody nose. And then she passed out. The guy, 19 years old, he was booked on charges of aggravated assault, domestic violence, and being an idiot. And let's get this. He told officers he only meant to cause his girlfriend to lose consciousness for a couple seconds. And he tried to mimic what he learned from the next martial arts television program. So MMA didn't already have a bad name. Got one from that incident. But the guy's 19 years old and he's got 3 kids. I don't know. He's making too many good life choices. You can see he's that young. Getting in trouble there. Another story on a lighter note. Kimbo Slice is going to be back at least talking about MMA. He's going to be counter-programming on Spike TV. As opposed to the Ultimate Fighter new episode, new season is starting with live fights coming up pretty shortly here. I just got a nice press packet from the FX folks today in the mail. 2 days after I sent them an email saying I want to be kept up to date on everything, they sent me this really nice press packet with full-color booklet and DVD, and it's going to be a good season. It starts March 9th, and basically Spike TV still owns the rights to all their UFC footage through the end of the year. So since they're so pissed off that the UFC didn't renew their contract, they're going to be doing counter-programming every night that the Ultimate Fighter new episodes are on. And Kimbo Slice is going to be on there. And he's going to basically be recapping the season that he was on, which was actually the highest rated of all 14 seasons on Spike. That averaged 3.4 million viewers per week. What they're going to do is they're going to run old episodes of The Ultimate Fighter every Friday night. And FX is going to be showing their new series. While Spike's sister station, MTV2, is going to be showing Bellator's fights. And they're going to be moving over to Spike TV next year. And Kimbo's just going to be talking about some behind-the-scenes stuff from his season and also kind of narrating some of the other episodes. So get to see Kimbo back on TV, chatting up the MMA. Yeah, we still haven't found out about that yet. I still got to work.
He's trying to put together Ray Mercer, Kimbo Slice, and Bell Holyfield 4.
Exactly. Anyway, let's talk to the boxing referee here. We're going to get Richard Steele on the phone. He's been running Steel Cage Promotions, and we'll have to talk to him a little bit about that, a little bit about his boxing background. He's out in Vegas there, where I used to be. Hello?
At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Richard, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. We're trying to get in touch with you for the radio show. We'll try you back in a couple minutes. So he's out of range, I guess, right now.
Yeah, that's the cross table, you know it. But no, I mean, the one thing about Richard Steele, obviously, hopefully we do get to talk to him tonight. Because some of the things to ask him, I mean, the guy had a long and distinguished career as a, a top-flight referee. And what's always going to kind of hang the black cloud over his head is the Melchior Taylor, Julio Cesar Chavez fight. St. Patrick's Day, 1990. I can't believe it's almost going to be 22 freaking years. I feel old. But like I said, I remember watching that fight live. And, Meldrick goes down and gets up with, a matter of seconds to go and ahead on the cards and gets waved off with 2 seconds to go. I mean, there was no way Chavez would even had time to reach him with another punch. And it's always been a big point of controversy as because, the fact is, we're talking about it 22 years later. He's also had, he was involved in the first Mike Tyson Razor Ruddock fight, which was only bad.
All right, folks, sorry about the difficulties there again. Dropped. We'll get Tony back on, and then we'll try Richard Steele again.
Hey,
Okay, what were we talking about?
You were discussing Razor Ruddock, Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean Tyson was in control of that fight, and, you know, stoppage did seem imminent. I mean, he'd already had Ruddock down twice and had him wobbled pretty bad in the seventh round when they stopped the fight. But the fight I think I want to ask Richard about the most would be another one that stands the test of time nearly 30 years later, maybe one of the greatest opening rounds of all time, if not the greatest opening round of all time, Hagler-Hearns. What it was like to be in there when those two guys just, you know, just let it all fly out. And so, I mean, he was in there refereeing Leonard's comeback against Hagler. So, you know, we got to get a lot of good topics, you know, to discuss with them.
It's funny, I actually have a baseball cap with Hagler and Hearns on it with their picture from the face-off, the gloves on. And it says Caesar's Palace on it, and it's definitely from the 80s. I remember my Uncle Tom gave it to me, and he had, like, a huge hat collection. And I was into boxing even when I was a kid when he gave it to me, and I kept it all these years. And I was thinking, like, a couple weeks ago, I was like, you know, I wonder where that is. It's probably worth money now. And just by accident, I found it in the garage. It's intact.
Yeah, that's usually how you find stuff like that. You're not looking for it, and there it is.
Yeah, right?
You look for something, God, I mean, I never find anything I'm looking for.
All right, we'll try Richie again.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if someone's still listening, but when we get a chance, I got the secret word for everybody today.
Hello.
Hello, Richard.
Yes.
Hey, how's it going? This is the Rabble Rouser, Rich Bergeron. Fight News on the
Yeah, I've been waiting for you.
All right. We tried it a little bit earlier. We didn't connect. But, we also have our boxing rain man on the line here, Tony Penicow. He's called the...
Hey, Richard, how you doing tonight?
All right, Tony, real good.
Now, tell us a little bit about what you got going on out there in Vegas these days.
Well, I have a boxing mixed martial arts gym. Have about 250 members. Really exciting. We got out of the 250, we got about 50 girls that have joined and very competitive. So we also do different educational programs, and we're just trying to do whatever we can do to keep these kids busy and keep them doing the positive things.
Awesome.
Yeah, I always thought that was very important, no matter whether you're in the inner cities or in the suburb area. I know I trained in the inner city gym for a lot of years, and one of our trainers in there was a Rev Thompson, who actually used to train Matthew Shaw Muhammad. And that's what Rev his big thing was, and I still see Rev, I saw him about 2 months ago. His thing was he wanted to get kids out of gang and into the gym. And I remember him doing that, I mean, obviously before I was born. He was doing it in the 70s, and he's still doing it today.
It's everybody's job to help. To guide these young people in a positive way and help guide them to a very successful future, you know. It's everybody's job, but some people can do it better than others.
Absolutely. I always, I mean, now that, you know, I'm not really fighting anymore and I don't get down to the old gym like I used to, I have kids come over to my own little small personal gym. And I had a young man, he was without direction before he started coming to me. And now he's motivated to do things. He's motivated to go to college. And, you know, he's not getting into trouble anymore.
Yeah, that's the main thing, you know, because, I had maybe four, and I've been very lucky. I have four of my students to make it to the Olympic tryouts. Two of them made the Olympic team. And, I mean, we're talking about four students out of thousands.
Right.
So, you know, we know that everybody is not going to be Olympic fighter. And I've had three to fight for the world title and out of thousands. So we know everybody's not going to be a world title holder. But we know that everyone can get a education and be able to get a good job where he can be able to take care of himself and his family.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. I know what Rev Thompson told me when I was first meeting him back about 16 years ago. He goes, not every kid in my gym comes in there, you know, becomes a world champion or even becomes a professional fighter. But he goes, I measure myself when these guys that came into my gym as a misguided youth leave and they become police officers or school teachers or electricians.
Yes.
Anything that where they're making a positive instead of a negative impact on society.
Yeah, you're right, because I know I have many that have became police officers. I have about three that have became firemen. They work for the fire department. And, you know, you see the ones that have jobs with the post office and all the different city jobs. You know, those are the real heroes.
Now, Richard, what got you involved in mixed martial arts after being so long in boxing?
Well, you know, boxing has kind of hit its face for several months now, I'd say about a couple of years. And, you know, so many kids that wanted to do the MMA. And, you know, when you really look at it, all it is entertainment. And when you really look at it, there are some real skills, levels, and especially mixed martial arts. And because the word mixed martial arts, there's about five or six different arts that they can use to be victorious over their partners. And it takes some skill levels for a person to be able to learn all six of them and be victorious. So, I mean, they do put their time in, you know, not like a boxer. I'm not saying it's like a boxer, like boxing, but they put their time in and they dedicate themselves and, you know, they hopefully can get in there and make some money and make a name for themselves.
Right. And you're working with young amateurs now?
Yeah, I have a young amateur kid that came from Russia, and, you know, this guy is really, I mean, the way he tells me and the way that he displays his talent in the ring is this is all he got. He has nothing else. And if he doesn't make it in this, he don't know what he's going to do. Well, I like that type of attitude. But that's the type of attitude that you must have to become a world champion. But, you know, I'm working with him. You know, he's very polite. He's just a young guy that's wanted a chance. So I told him, you know, I will give him a chance as long as he keeps his head on straight and keep his work ethic up and keep away from, you know, the negative things like drugs, alcohol, and tobacco, you know?
Right.
So he definitely, you know, a kid that really wants it bad, and you don't have to worry where he's at night. You don't have to worry about, you know, just like it used to be in boxing, you know? But I'm very interested in this one kid, but mixed martial art has really caught my eye.
And what do you enjoy most about boxing?
What do I enjoy the most?
Yeah, just about being in the fight.
Oh, because it always gives the underdog a chance. The underdog has a chance to be victorious. The underdog has a chance to win, and not only win in the boxing match or the fight, but to win in life. So, you know, once you learn how to push yourself, and that's what really I really love about boxing and mixed martial art, because you learn to push yourself to become a champion or become a worthy opponent. You push yourself, and the same thing in life. You have to push yourself to become a productive citizen. So that's what I really love about it.
And really, how did you get started in boxing? How did you start to get the referee gig and get into business?
Well, you know, I started boxing in the Marine Corps. I was in the Marine Corps, and matter of fact, the same day, Ken Norton and I, we started the same day in the Marine Corps. And we went on to win all Marine Corps championships the next year, second year, and matter of fact, that was in 1963, and we had a chance to even go to the Olympic trials, the 64 Olympic trials. So, I mean, you know, I was in for the long run because, I mean, I did so well in my first 2 years. And then once I got out of the service, I turned professional and, you know, had 16 professional fights. They're pretty good. I'm a I lost 4 out of 16, got my ribs broke, and the injury never healed up. So I got a chance to stay in the game that I really love, stay in the game that I know that really works for me, and maybe I could help some other young people in the same game. I could start refereeing, and, you know, everything took off from there.
Absolutely. Richard, and I'm looking, you know, obviously for the big fight for the referee, and I mentioned it to Rich before we got you on the air. Back in 1985, you refereed one of the greatest fights in history, if not the greatest, and probably the greatest opening round in history, that being Marvin Hagler and Tommy Hearns. What was it like being in the ring with those guys when they just decided to let the bomb fly?
Well, I tell you, you know, that fight itself was the greatest three rounds ever in history of boxing. That fight, I mean, these guys gave the fans everything that they thought, everything that they wanted to see, all in three rounds. And I tell you, that fight got me more tired in one round than I ever been in my life. I mean, they was punching, they was moving. And as if you can remember, you know, blood. I mean, I never seen a guy get hit before that or even after that, get hit straight in the head, and he busted, you know, Hagler's head, Tommy Hearns, the hitman. He busted Hagler's head wide open, and blood was just running down. And I'll never forget what Hagler told me. I took him to the doctor just to get a medical opinion. And he told me, he said, look, Rich, I'm not going to let you stop this fight on no cut. And after that, he went to work and knocked Tommy Hearns out.
And I remember my dad watching that fight and then him bringing the videotape for me as I was about 9 years old when that fight happened. And I just remember watching the videotape over and over and over. And
yeah.
I remember even thinking, being young at that time and seeing the blood come out of his, you know, his head like that, I was like, wow, man, they really might stop this fight. And I was like, and I was a big Marvin Hagler fan. And I was like, I don't want them to stop this fight. And then I was like, we have the honor of just recently passed away, Goody Petronelli, who Rich knows.
Right,
we had him
right.
On the show with us, and we talked about that fight, what it was like, and you know, just how Hagler just came out there so intense for being the guy that was usually a slow starter. And
yeah,
what he did in that fight was he negated Tommy Hearns' boxing skills, because Tommy could outbox anybody.
Yes. Yeah, but so the thing is, once he saw that blood, I mean, he went straight to him. He didn't let Tommy box. He didn't let Tommy do anything but fall flat on the floor after all those hard combinations. I mean, he went to work, and like he told me, he was not going to allow anybody to stop that fight on the cut. So he went to work and knocked his opponent out.
And the other thing I was going to ask you, I mean, you obviously refereed a lot of, I mean, Hall of Fame fighters out there. Some of the best guys you've had the honor of working with, I mean, I'm looking at guys like Aaron Pryor, Alexis Arguello, Mike Tyson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, Julio Cesar Chavez. Who were some of the better ones that you can remember being in there with?
Well, you know, definitely. You got to give the Leonard, the Hagler's, the Hearns, and Chavez. These were great fighters, you know. Muhammad Ali, I had a chance to judge one of his fights. But, these were great fighters, and we keep looking for someone to come along that is, that would be really close to these type of fighters, you know. We haven't been able to find one yet, and, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know if we ever will, because of the simple fact, it takes a long time to get the skills of the Leonard, the Haglers, Tommy Hearns, Muhammad Ali, Julio Cesar Chavez. They put a lot of time in their craft, in their skill level. So the kids today, they're not pushed to put that much time in, and that's why they're champions one day and the next day they lose it. You know, they just have them put the time in to be able to, they might be able to get to the top, but be able to stay on top, you know, like most of all of the fighters in the 80s and the 90s, you know, they stayed there. Once they got to that level of championship, they would stay there and defend their title at least 5 or 6 times.
Well, one thing I always say that I find that is a big difference today, now, I'm a boxing guy. I mean, I remember growing up watching the fights in the late 70s or early 80s when I was just a little boy, sitting on my dad's lap and watching the afternoon, Wide World of Sports cars. Guys, you know, like Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, like Boom Boom Mancini and all those guys. And the one thing I see today was, and the two guys I always use as a comparison are Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. I said, if they were champions today, they wouldn't argue as much like Mayweather and Pacquiao are, you know, not fighting each other and they're taking pot shots. These guys would be in the ring probably twice by now.
Yeah, you're right about that. You know, because the simple fact is that they love boxing. They love the fans. They love the fans. They love, the fight nights, and they love all of that. The kids today, they love money. That's the difference.
Yeah, right.
That's the difference. You know, they love money more than they love the game and, you know, making the fans happy. The fighters in the 80s and 90s and all the other years, you know, the fans could get anyone to fight. You know, if they wanted to see two young fighters fight, they got their wish years ago. But nowadays, the money got to be right. And, you know, that's the way it is. They love the money more than they love the game.
Well, I said this, I think my theory, the two big names right now being Mayweather and Pacquiao, my theory is there's a great reward for the winner. Just because it was a great reward for Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. But I think the guys are too concerned about their legacies to risk that for that potential reward. Pacquiao knows he can fight a guy like Timothy Bradley, who's a very good fighter, but he's not Mayweather. And Mayweather knows he can fight a guy like Miguel Cotto and make a lot of money on a guy that's, you know, a little bit past his prime and a little bit chop-worn, instead of taking that big challenge out there.
And I think, you know, they'd like a reward, absolutely. But I think both of them are afraid to risk that superstardom. Mayweather's afraid to risk that zero in his record. And Pacquiao, who's seen as a god in his home country, I think he's afraid to risk that.
Yeah, you're right, because the money that's been offered to these guys, how can you turn down $65 million? I can't understand that.
I think that's going to happen late this year, maybe November or December. But I wanted to ask you, Richard, as a referee, what did you think of that last fight for Mayweather, where the referee was kind of in the middle of it?
He kind of, in a way, it was a hard fight for him to referee because, he kind of blew it in one way. And, when you take your eyes off the fighter, you don't know what's going to happen. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I'm on the side of the folks who said, defend yourselves at all times, but in the same respect, the referee was not keeping an eye on the action, and I wondered if he had seen it, would he have taken the point? Would he have done something different? I don't know. That's the big question, I think.
But if he had been watching, he would have been a little closer. So it wouldn't have been able to happen the way it did.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is your ultimate goal in the industry, in the fighting game and boxing and MMA?
My goal is at this stage in my life, I would have to go out with a champion somewhere. I got 200 kids in my gym. I would like to have a champion. I would like to be able to guide a young man to the title fight, and then not only to the title fight, but win the title.
Right. And what kind of kids do you think are close to that right now?
Oh gee, I don't have one. The MMA guy, he got a long ways to go. And as far as boxing, I don't even have a prospect.
Time, right? But where is the gym located? How can people find you out there in Vegas?
Okay, the address is 2475 West Cheyenne. Cheyenne is in North Las Vegas. Cheyenne and Simmons is a wonderful gym. Richard Steele Boxing Club is the name of it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I probably should have done a lot more while I was out there. I was out there between last February and November, past November.
Well, you guys, next time you come, stop by and see me and let's talk boxing.
For sure. Now, as far as the other MMA promotion you had, Steel Cage, is that still going on?
Yeah, it's still going on. We're putting it back together now. Sponsorships are not as easy to come by as it used to be, but it's still going on.
Cool. And now, what do you think about just the general state of boxing versus MMA? There's a whole debate going on now that boxing is dying. And then there's the whole idea that MMA is the fastest growing sport in the world.
Yeah, right. Because more kids are being able to get into it easier. But you look at the UFC, they really have done a great job with MMA. You need more promoters in MMA to have more fighters, So, who knows, if the public is really behind the MMA, it might be the sport of the century. And, boxing just, unless, I keep waiting for this, the Olympics has never been very good to the United States in the last three Olympics or four Olympics. So maybe this Olympics, we might be able to have some stars to come out, Olympics, because, you know, you have to promote. You can't just promote anybody.
Right. And you said you had a lot of women show up at the gym there? Are they more...
Yeah, we got a lot of girls. We got a lot of girls who like to get in shape, you know. But, you know, they like to get in shape. But, you know, some of them are very competitive, and but most of them are not, you know. But they like to work out and get in shape, hit the bags. And it's a hard and very good workout for them, so they love it.
Yeah. Kind of interesting you mention that, because when I was a coach of our club team up at Norwich University in college, I had about 30 girls show up for practice one day, and I was wondering, you know, where did this come from? And apparently they heard about the ab workout that I used to do at the end of practice, 30 minutes.
Yep, you're right.
They wanted to show up.
Yeah, you're right, and that's what happens with me with the gym. But they like to get them, they like to hit the bags, and they like to hit the mitts, you know, and they like to get active and sweat and get in shape.
It was funny too, because one of the girls that was most concerned about her appearance and her makeup and everything like that, and she was a freshman in the military corps there, and was always getting yelled at for having makeup on when she wasn't supposed to. And she ended up being one of the only girls who would get in and spar. Get out.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
But what else can you tell us about the gym itself? How you started, and you know, what do you do differently there than the other guys running gyms?
We just do the same thing. We don't do a whole lot of different things. It's the same thing, you know. And you know, we just try to make it, you know, pleasing and try to make it where, you know, the kids really enjoy it, you know, and the adults too, you know.
Right. Tony, you got a question? Come on.
Yeah, well, the final question I was going to ask was, in the illustrious career you have with the sport of boxing and now mixed martial arts, and we already talked about Hagler Hearns, what are some of the greatest memories that you can take out of all these crazy sports that we all love?
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, what keeps me satisfied is that, you know, I have been around some great fighters, and thank God none of them has ever been hurt seriously on my watch. So, you know, I can call it a day and be pleased with it.
Absolutely. And that is a good thing. I mean, you know, all the guys you've worked with, whether refereeing or, you know, training, you know, at the end of the day, the most important thing is, you know, these people that, you know, these athletes, these warriors, you know, have walked away and were able to move on and, you know, not suffer, you know, serious damages, you know, during those encounters.
Right. Right, you're so true, you know, because you see them all the time, you know, and you know, throughout life, you know, you see them and you can just remember that you did a fight, you know, like the Hagler's and the Leonard's and you know, all of them. I can, you know, when I see them, I'm always happy to see them. They're happy to see me, and we're going about our business, going about our life. But it's been a great run for me. It's been a great run for a lot of great fighters. And, you know, we have really entertained the world many and many times before. And, you know, you guys hang in there, people like you to, you know, keep bringing it back and help us to promote it. We really couldn't do it without you. And I know everybody that is listening to your radio station enjoyed this interview, and you know, I know you're gonna bring them more. You guys take care. My battery is about to go out, and it's been nice.
thanks a lot, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Keep in touch.
Please do. Thank you.
Right. Thanks a lot. There you go. There's Rich Neal.
That was a very good interview. Very enjoyable. That I've, ever since I really started breaking into boxing, Richard Steele was a, one of the top premier referees in the sport. It is a shame that, his career, like I said, the legacy of his career will always be that stoppage of Chavez Taylor. I purposely did not want to bring that topic up tonight because in the 22 years since it happened, every interview the guy does, it's like, that's the first question he gets asked about. I was more interested, honestly,
We were just the MySpace page, I think. It might be shortly after that. And I think I did ask him about that then, so.
No,
he's great.
He did KO and Ring Magazine, and that's like always the first question. At the end of the day, his last comment is probably, the most significant comment, and what he said was, he can always walk away and be proud that in all the fights he refereed, nobody was ever seriously hurt. And at the end of the day, that is the most important thing. Wins and losses are nice. I mean, hey, I was a Meltzer Taylor fan growing up, and I wanted him to win that fight. I was mad when Richard Steele stopped it. I was 13 years old. I wanted the Philadelphia guy to win. And I know people that know Meltzer. I've only ever really met him once, and that was kind of in passing. But along the same lines, he was protecting the man's health. And, that's in all honesty, the more important part of it.
Right. Well, we also, have news of another, boxing guy going into MMA before we get our next guest on Diamond Dallas Page. I came across a story this week, and I figured might as well get it on the show. Pavel Volok has been talking about going into MMA, and he's apparently retired from boxing, but if he does come back, he says it's probably going to be in MMA. He says on Facebook last week, as it got onto Twitter today, there is truth to me fighting again, but not sure if in the ring or octagon, as was the plan when I retired. I don't know much right now and cannot say much as it relates to MMA opportunities because of my boxing contract. It's ongoing discussions as it relates to my contract with my boxing promoter. More news as I get it. So that's kind of interesting. I know I heard a little bit about this when he first mentioned it, but I never knew his boxing contract was going to get in the way of that. You figure if a guy retires from boxing, he can't have contract issues, can he? I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Maybe he had some kind of agreement where it was just a temporary retirement. I don't know. That's weird. But we could see him in MMA. He decides to do that. So let's try to connect here with Diamond Dallas Page. We got a couple minutes before he's expecting us.
Well, we got a lot of we're in March now.
It's the leap year, and it still felt like a short month.
I know.
It's always
funny. I was like, damn, that extra day in February is delaying my trip to Florida by an extra day.
We got Diamond Dallas Page coming up.
Yeah, I'm looking at something right now. I was trying to see if we got anything interesting coming up this weekend on this year. We got DDP coming up? All right, I'm ready.
Joshua.
Hello.
Hey, man, are we still talking to kind of interview tonight?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
We thought you were doing it.
Yeah, we're live. We are live on the air right now.
Good thing I'm true then.
Surprise.
let me get in my car and gotta turn the all the ignition on here and everything and try to get my phone transferred over to my car so it picks up in here. Hold on one second, kid. All right, it's picking up right now. Should be live and in color here any second.
What kind of car does the is the DDP Mobile?
It is a brand new Grand Cherokee Limited.
Nice.
Actually, funny. I was just looking at a Grand Cherokee myself. I ended up going with an Escape instead.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a different car. This is a monster. I got the V8 to stop the flat panel.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you got going on there with this DDP yoga and anything else you wanted to discuss about just what's new?
All right, well, as far as, have you guys been to DDPYoga.com yet?
Yeah, I checked it out a couple times already.
Okay, so what did you see there? What stood out to you? Did you see Chris Jericho?
Well, I watched the video. I saw all the testimonials there about the people that lost a ton of weight. I'm one of those guys who probably could use some pounds off the gut, so it was definitely interesting to me. I used to box, but kind of fell out of it in recent years. I broke my ankle last year, early last year, so it still hasn't quite recovered. So I've been using that as an excuse.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you see the disabled veteran that I helped walk again?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, the guy was walking around. He was a power trooper. That's how he got hurt. He was a disabled veteran. The power troopers, I don't know if you know anything about them, but they actually drop 18 feet a second and, carrying 100, 200 pounds on their back. So just imagine what that's like. Just like professional wrestling, you can't fake gravity. And when you're younger, you could take that to a certain degree. But every one of those guys, every one of those paratroopers, when they get done, and they've had 30 or 40 jumps, when they get to 30 or 40, they're really going to feel it. From their ankles to their hips to their back, everything, knees. And he had over 500 jumps. And long story short, his body was breaking down on him so bad after 14 years in, he decided he's going to retire. And then they had the first Gulf War. And when that happened, well, that, he had to go do that. Because that's what they do. If you're on retiring, they have to go stop watching. You got to go. So he went, and after being there for about a period of time, he took some really bad falls, and they sent him home permanently disabled. So your ankle injury would be nothing next to what this guy went through. And he ended up gaining a ridiculous amount of weight, at 5'6", up to 297 pounds, walking with knee braces, but strapped into a back brace with wraparound cane. Now, doing my program, over a 9-month period, he lost 130 pounds. And this workout was never about weight loss. That's just a really awesome side effect. What he got back was his body. He got back his flexibility. He got back his core strength. And if you go to DDPYoga.com and you watch this video, you will see the guy lose 130 pounds and go walking with the braces and canes to not only walking without braces and canes, but running. So when you saw that video, you tell me, what did you feel?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was inspirational, for sure. And a lot of people don't associate yoga with weight loss or, a lot of those effects that that guy experienced. So what is so different about your version of yoga than anyone else's?
Well, for starters, I never call it yoga. It's DDP yoga. It's DDP yoga and throw it on the end. It ain't your mama's yoga. And I put that together like that because I wanted people to laugh just like that. But I also want them to understand that, like, someone will come to my class when I'm doing it on the road, wherever I go, and you know, promote my stuff. I end up doing the workout somewhere. And I'll say to them, I said, for those of you who came here because you heard this was yoga, because you heard DDP yoga, if you came here when I reach my arms up, as I'm saying this, to reach your arms to the heavens so the universe smiles back at you, I drop my arms and go, you might be in the wrong class. So I right away, you know, the only thing it's yoga about my workout is I took some really awesome yoga moves. Because what happened to me, if it comes about because of necessity, I never thought, well, I think I'll do yoga now. I'm a guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga the first 42 years of my life. But I ruptured my L4 and L5 when I was 42. Now, I'm sure some of you guys know that I didn't start wrestling until I was 35. My career didn't take off until I was 40. That's to put that in perspective, anybody's listening, who's not a wrestling fan, Steve Austin, one of the greatest of all time, retired at 37. Edge just retired. I think he's like 34. You know, so the wear and tear that happens in our punishment of professional wrestling, less than 270 days a year, you can't fake gravity. And I was running between 96 and 98, easily 270 days a year, in the ring, bouncing around, in my 40s, like I was in my, like kids would be doing today in their 30s and 20s. And at some point, my doctor said, uncle, we're done. And when you rupture a disc, imagine this. It would be like taking two jelly donuts and putting them on top of each other and then squishing them. That's what it was like. And then that vertebrae juice on top, that juice got to go somewhere. So it goes both in nerve ending. There's not supposed to be anything. It is so painful. So the doctors say to me, three specialists, you're done. Got a hell of a run, but it's over. Unless you want to be crippled when you turn 50. So I had to really think about that because I just signed a multi-million-dollar 3-year deal. And when it was all said and done, you know, I kept doing the rehab. And at that time, I was still married to Kim. And she's like, why don't you try yoga to heal your body? And my reaction to that, my first reaction was, what? Doing yoga? I would be caught dead doing yoga. That was my, you know, my framing of my mind. And I really learned in a hurry that flexibility is huge, not just in my body, but in my mind. My mind had to be flexible for the idea. And once I did become flexible for the idea, in the next couple of weeks, I was blown away how much flexibility and core strength started to come back where they told me it was non-existent. So I kept doing the rehab. This is what makes it different in yoga. I was taking rehabilitation moves. I've torn both rotator cuffs. I've torn both meniscus and both knees. I tore my ACL and my anterior cruciate, my right knee. I've blown out my back. My discs are jammed in my neck. I know a little something about rehab because I've rehabbed just about every part of my body. So I took those moves and mixed them together with the yoga position. And then I added something nobody does in yoga, and I threw in old-school calisthenics. For yoga, you might do a push-up or two, but most likely you fold forward, you reach to the heavens, you fold forward, you look up, you jump back in the plank, you lower, then you push up with an awesome stretch called Cobra, then you go back in the down dog, then you jump, and you do the whole thing again. That was boring to me. So instead of lowering, and I had to lower on my knees because my back was so blown out, I'd lower 3, 2, 1, and I'd hold myself 3 inches off the ground, like I'm lifting weights. And then I'd hold for 3, push up for 3, come down for 3, hold for 3, then go to Cobra. Well, eventually, I got off my knees. Eventually, those 3 second push-ups became 5. or 5 second punches to gain 10. Nobody in yoga does that. Nobody. I did it with squats, crunches, everything. So I start working in, that's the way he described it. I call it dynamic resistance. Yoga is peaceful. Like I said, you reach your arms to the heavens, but the universe smiles back at you. What I got you doing is flexing muscles. Have you ever seen a bodybuilder show before? Have you ever seen that?
Yep.
Yeah.
So what happens in a bodybuilder show? What are they doing when they're up on stage?
They just go up and flex.
There you go. They're flexing their muscles. So what I was realizing, if I would flex my muscles as I went from position to position, my heart rate would get up. And the only way I really realized that is once I started, about 2 months in, I felt really good. And I thought, now I can add in some cardio. So I get on my Stairmaster, I always wear a heart monitor when I'm working out because I don't want to hurt myself. I don't want to overtrain. And so many people overtrain. All those boob trainers on Biggest Loser, every one of those people are overtraining at a psycho level. And they may get amazing results, but they're going to be so effed up in the years to come. And that's why a lot of them break down. And they all gain that weight back because their body are so beat up from the 6 months that they put them through. Really bad training there. Really bad. Bad, bad for you. You know, that whole no pain, no gain thing you're doing on that show, that works when you're under 25 years old. Maybe under 30. But after 30 years old, that no pain, no gain don't work. Pain means pain. Like, listen to your body. And that's what I teach. So I've got this heart monitor on me, right? I'm doing the Stairmaster. And I get done with my workout. I've never taken over 100. I was 42 at the time, so I never took it over 138. Really, 135. I wouldn't take it over that. And after I got done working out, I got on the mat, and I started doing my workout that I was calling at the time YRG, which really stood for Yoga for Regular Guys. And I looked at my heart monitor by chance when I was doing those push-ups slow. And I saw, oh, my God, how did my heart rate get to 140? And then I realized every time I engaged a muscle, whether I was using my hands on the mat, using my body against body, if I just acted like I was doing curls, bending my knees, my heart rate went bing, 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 bing. And then I'd let go and wouldn't engage my muscles, and it would go down, 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 down. So I realized every time I engaged the muscle, my heart had to beat faster to get the blood to the muscle. So here's what happened, guys. This is what makes CDP yoga its own animal. Every time you move, in the beginning, you're engaging muscles. So your heart rate gets in the fat-burning zone almost immediately, standing still. So what we're talking about here is zero impact on your ankle, on your knee, on your back. Zero impact, kick-ass cardio. I can take my heart rate over 200 if I want to. I don't want to do that because that's stupid. So this workout, DDP yoga, zero impact, kick-ass cardio, dramatically increased flexibility and core strength conditioning. If you go to ddpyoga.com, watch that video of Arthur Borman, the disabled veteran. That was 5 years ago. Today, Arthur can do stuff that I can't do, and I can do some crazy stuff, crazy strong stuff at 55. When Jericho saw that, Arthur, he's like, dude, send it to me now. Because he had a herniated L4, and the doctor said he was done. In 3 weeks, he called me up, and he said, D, I am blown away. I am addicted to this. I love it. He goes, I feel 85% of my pain gone. And then he said, well, then later on, 3 months later, a total of 3 months in, he came to my house and worked out with me. He said he was 95% pain-free and that DDP yoga changed his life. You know, that's awesome, especially coming from one of the boys. You know, when one of the boys will step up and say, hey, what he's got right here, is amazing. You need to do it. And that's what Jericho's done over and over again with the boys. And now right now we got Kane doing it, Mick Foley doing it. Santino, I'm not sure if you know who Ryback is. Pretty Young Studs coming up. I'm going to WrestleMania this year. I guarantee you 5 to 10 more of the boys will be doing it. Guarantee it. And as far as retired guys, Mark Merrow, Ray Lloyd. If you go to just Google DDT yoga, you'll see Ray Lloyd come up. You'll see Mark Merrow come up. And they talk about being pain-free for the first time in years. Years. So that's what my workout does. That's what makes it so different. Now I've got football players doing it. I've got hockey players doing it. And that's for guys who are real warlord warriors. I've also got little old ladies doing it. I've got young kids doing it. You mark my words. In 3 years, EDP yoga will dwarf what I was lucky enough to accomplish back in the 90s in wrestling. And that's a big statement because I was over a tell in the 90s. But this right here is like life-changing at a different level that really changes people's lives for the better.
Now, going back to
let me ask you,
can you tell us a little bit about some of the better moments, some of your greatest moments in the sport of wrestling?
Sure. You say you're going to ask me a question about that?
Yeah, just tell us. Tell us what your best moments were that you can remember.
Oh, best moments? Oh, God. I've had a lot of awesome moments, man. I'd say that the most amazing moments were when I first started getting over with the Diamond Cutter, and they were only letting me beat enhancement guys. And I would go out there like I was wrestling Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan or Sting. And I'd shine that guy and made him look great. And then made him look like he was going to kick my ass. And then out of nowhere, pulling the Diamond Cutter out of nowhere and watching the people explode. And that was really wild. Of course, Randy Savage, asking to work with me, which was amazing. And then him, I'll tell you the story in Florence, South Carolina. The Saturday, I guess it was the Friday night before we flew in for pay-per-view for Spring Stampede. And we were doing a show, and we had a lot of screw job finishes at the end. NWO would always run in. I'd bang a couple of guys and take off into the crowd. Or they'd leave me laying, one of the two. But I never got to Randy until that night when Arn Anderson walked in the locker room and he said, "So, Randy, what do you want to do tonight?" It wasn't like Randy did the job for anyone he didn't want to. He had, like Hogan, he had the, I control my own destiny card. And he looked at Arn and he said, "I think I want to take the Diamond Cutter." And I almost fell over. Arn almost fell over. Arn looked at me and he goes, "Diamond, you realize what an honor this is?" And I'm like, "Yeah, Arn, I do." And we went out there, and I'll tell you, they were hanging from the rafters. It was only like maybe 7,400 people filling that building. It was easily over 8,000. There were people everywhere. We were so hot. Beginning in 97, Nitro, our house shows, everything was sold out in a matter of minutes. And Randy and I were the main event. And being in a main event with Randy Savage, that was its own animal. And we went out there and we tore it down. And, Randy got some really good heat on me. People chanting DDP so loud, it was like deafening. And every time I'd come back, the place would go nuts and boom, Randy shut me down. And finally, I blew that big comeback. Everybody was going crazy. And then I made the Diamond Cutter sign, the roof blow off, and then Randy nut shot at me. Right back down, And he goes to pick me up to slam me, and I turn it into the Diamond Cutter, and I swear it was an earthquake in the building. I mean, it went, wow. People going crazy, and we're just laying there. And I just waited about, 10 seconds before I crawled over there, laid my arm across him, and the entire building counting, 1, 2, play. And then it was like a moment of silence, it seemed like, for a moment. And then the place went ballistic. I mean, you'd think I won the World Series or something. And in all the insanity, and as loud as it was, it seemed like there was a little, I don't know if you ever watched Get Smart, but they had the cone of silence in Get Smart, that show. It felt like there was a cone of silence that came over me and Randy, because I could hear him saying so crystal clear, I guess we got our finish for spring stampede. Like, wow, really? Really? Come on, really? And that, you know, that's what jettisoned my career. Of course, it was Scott and Kev, who were the baddest SOBs on the planet, the leaders of the NWO, that, you know, when they took the diamond cutter, you know, in the middle, and Kevin getting backdropped over the top ropes, you know, a month before that, that really set that whole angle up. That was the rocket that those two guys put me on. And then Randy just sent me into the upper stratosphere.
Mm-hmm. And of course, what was funny was obviously I didn't know you were going to be our guest tonight until about 5 minutes before we went on the air. I grew up being a huge wrestling fan, and I remember watching all the Monday Night Wars when I was in college and really enjoying it. Today, before I was getting ready to go to work, I was putzing around a little bit and procrastinating, and I picked up one of my favorite all-time wrestlers' books that I've had for a long time, Mankind, Mick Foley's book, the first one. And what chapter did I happen to step open up to? The Cookie Story. With you, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Mick Foley. Yeah.
What's the point? I haven't read
it. What was your...
You got to tell us the story now, because I haven't even read it. What was the story?
So you want me to tell the story? Okay. So, by the way, in fact, to segue into this, Mick Foley is doing DDT yoga now. He was just over in Europe, in the UK, and playing out there. He would tell everybody it was awesome. I think, hope he keeps doing it, because Mick is so beat up. I really hope he does. But, you know, that would make me see. Now, Mick and Steve, they would always bust my chops out. They would bust my chops big time, because I was a rookie. And I'm the old man. I'm 9 years older than both of them guys. And so we none of us had any money. Imagine Stone Cold, DDP, and Mick Foley, three of the biggest stars of the 90s, all jabroni guys. Well, those guys were above me. They were mid-card guys. I was a jabroni. And so, you know, we wanted to triple up in a room to save money and get a Red Roof Inn, you know, some little hobble place, you know, Motel 6 type place. And so I got the cot, and I went out all the time to party. Those guys, they stayed home, and they knew that I slept naked. So when I got home that night, now Mick had gotten some cookies from one of the fans, because he was the sweetest guy I ever seen to be to the fans back in the day. He's the only guy I thought was nicer than I was. And he got these cookies, and as a rib, he put them in my bed. So I just get into bed and I'm moving around. I'm like, we're on, this is the internet.
You there, Tony? 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 Hello? Yeah.
I'm here. Okay. I can hear you clear as a whistle.
Oh, well, I wasn't hearing you back, so I did a call back. That was funny. Simon's like, it's the internet, and the phone cut off. It was self-centered. I don't know what caused it. Connection.
Yo.
All right, we're back. Sorry about that.
All right, you guys go. Hold on 1 second. Talk amongst yourself. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Yeah, so what happened, Rich?
I think it's Blog Talk Radio. It's screwing up tonight because a couple times I tried to call the number back for the show, and it just it wouldn't even connect to the show, which has never happened before. It kept saying invalid number. So I think it's their interface is screwy tonight. It's probably something to do with this big snowstorm coming through the Northeast.
All right, guys.
All right, we're back. So you were talking
What'd you get? What's the last thing you got?
It's funny. The last thing we got was, is this the internet? Cut out. But, yeah, we're a non-FTC show, so all language is okay.
Well, that's what I wanted to know. To tell the story, you have to have a few fuck bombs in there. So, you know, because I mean it. So I'm laying in bed, or this cot, doing a bed, a rollout, and these two guys are acting like they're sleeping. And I thought they were sleeping until as I'm crunching around with the friggin' the cookies, the chocolate chip cookies, mind you, too. I'm like, you motherfucker, silly. And he's a little kid, you know. He's like, he's trying not to laugh, but he's just like shaking up and down. And I sit up like, you motherfucker. And fucking Austin, he's fucking like, he's like no sell ever, but he's selling this. He's like rolling over. He ain't got anything to do with it. I'm involved with it. That's his whole thing. And so then I grabbed those cookies and goes, you motherfucker. And I grabbed the cookies and the cheese and I started squishing them in his face and jumping up and down on his face going, how do you fucking like it, you piece of shit, you son of a bitch. I'm so fucking blah, 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 blah. And he's laughing so hard now. And at some point he says, I don't care about the cookies, but your ass in my face is going to cause you serious problems. You don't get the fuck off me. So, it was just one of those stories. And you want to know, that's how that book got written. We interviewed Mick for our book, Positively Page. And Mick was so blown away that I was writing my own book. The guy who grew up with ADD and dyslexia was reading at a third grade level at the age of 30, was writing his own book. The only person who had written their own book at that time was Arn Anderson. That was it. And ours was sort of like a kayfabe book. He talked as if nothing was a shoot. You know, I didn't, obviously. But Mick, we used to drive together all the time. We were both big Christmas freaks. And I used to always tell him, when you take those stupid, crazy bumps, you know, to the floor and, you know, on cement floor off the, you know, off the apron, you know, and it was a house show and there's 300 people there. I'm like, Mick, what are you doing? I go, you're better than this, man. And, you know, his whole thing was he had to give to the fans his whole body, which is really stupid because you look at the greatest wrestlers ever, they never took any big bumps ever. Not that Mick's bumps were stupid because, you know, it made him a legend. And he changed the business. He really did. But when it comes to his body, I was like, dude, you're smarter than this. You're one of the smartest guys I know. And he said when he got interviewed by my buddy Smokey, because anybody's read Positively Page, it's the only book ever of all the wrestling books, one of the only books ever that are written as a biography, an autobiographer, and then people come in throughout the thing. And Mick, I would tell the story with Mick, then Smokey would come in as the biographer. I was the autobiographer. And then I let Mick tell the story, or whether it be Jay Leno or John Bon Jovi or, you know, or Kevin Nash or whoever it was. They told their version, so I didn't say I this and I this and I that, you know. But Mick, he knew I was writing this book. He got on a plane to go to Germany to wrestle, he brought a ledger with him, like a legal pad, and started writing his book from that. So I thought that was amazing. And his books did amazing because he had the machine behind him, and they were the hotter property at the time. If I had come out with that book in 97 or 98, I'd have sold millions, even if it was by myself. But, you know, was what it was. We didn't bring a people. We did it by ourselves, and we still sold over 50,000 copies, which is pretty damn amazing for a publisher that's just on their own with no distribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm a writer, and I don't even have a book out yet, so it's a good accomplishment to have. But tell us a little bit more about the circuit nowadays. You said you're going to WrestleMania. What do you think about the popularity of the sport now and where it's going?
I think it's like anything. Wrestling has always been peaks and valleys. It's very cyclical. And I think that, eventually all these young guys will be older men. When I say 30s, Randy's like 30, Randy's 31 now or 32. It's the men that captivate the entire, scheme of wrestling. If you look back to the 90s when we were over as hell, wrestling will never be that hot again ever. I can't imagine. Maybe it could. I don't know. But I'm saying never, just from my own experience and what I've seen. If you look at it, all the superheroes were in their late 30s, early 40s. So these guys got a ways to go, and they're going to keep, as long as they don't get hurt, And that's one of the things one of the reasons why I love a lot of the guys doing my stuff, because they're going to have a longer shelf life. They're going to be able to last a lot longer. They're going to have more pain-free days. I should say. They'll have way more pain-free days. And over that period, I think that, wrestling, it's right now it's very PG. I think you're going to see Linda go back and run for Senate again and maybe win this time. So I don't see that changing anytime soon. And I think that the guys, there's a lot of talented guys out there, a lot of young, talented guys. And then it's a little more time in the ring, a little more time with the promos. I think it's going to be fine. Let's put it like that. It ain't going anywhere. It ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, I was never a huge fan, but I had a buddy of mine growing up that was religious, with wrestling. And he was one of those guys who, up until high school, I think, still thought it was real. So it was kind of a given. Every time you'd go over his house when WrestleMania was on, I'd watch it. So I did watch a lot of it, but I just kind of never hung on to it.
One of the things, I'm going to stick up for your friend, because I'm sure he didn't think it was real. But he got brought into an element of disbelief. And when wrestling is really done well, like if you watch my match with Goldberg at Halloween Havoc, I challenge anyone to tell me that we weren't knocking the shit out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
There was an element of disbelief in that. Where you suspended belief. And I can't tell you how many adults that had come up to me and go, I know wrestling. You guys, it's all the work, blah, blah, blah. But that shit you did with Savage, I know you hated him. You had to. The things he did and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, man, I love Randy. But I'm not going to spoil their thing. I'm not going to spoil it for him. It's a huge compliment to me when someone comes and says that kind of thing to me, because I know how much I did love Randy,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'm kind of like, growing up, I was a little bit different than Rich was. I was, a big wrestling fan in the 80s, the Hulkamania and the Ultimate Warrior and all those guys, Jake the Snake Roberts. And then as I kind of got, in the early 90s, when, before the wrestling really hit that boom in the mid-90s, I was kind of in high school, wrestling. It wasn't a cool thing at the time. And then when I got to college, it was funny because it became a cool thing. So all the guys in high school that weren't watching it were now watching it again. I'm like, okay, hey, yeah, I'll start watching. And that's right when Stone Cold Steve Austin boomed in, 96. That's right when the NWO boomed in WCW. And that's right when everything was really picking up. You had a great Monday Night Wars, and we used to have college parties for like Halloween every year. And
right.
I won contests. One year I did it. I won it as Mankind, made my own mask out of an old I made it out of an old beat up belt, and I had the sock and everything. And then the costume I did a couple years ago, and I actually did it again this year as a tribute, was Randy Macho Man Savage. And what I did was, because I'm a guy, I like to create my own things. So I got a red satin jacket. You know, I bought it on eBay for like $5. And I took strips of felt, like black and white, and I cut them. And I glued them on to make the fringe. And I cut the letters out of felt saying Macho Man. I had the hat on, the shutter shades, you know, the hands taped up. Oh, we had a blast. I won a contest with that one.
Well, people, you know, everybody is very, Randy Savage is very recognizable. Probably the most imitated guy. You know, when I first broke in, Sheik, the Sheik kid. Yeah, super baby. That's everybody impersonating the Sheik. Today, everybody, and for years, everybody's been impersonating Randy. You know?
Yeah.
He's so easy to impersonate, you know, and have fun with.
Yeah, it's even commercials snap into a Slim Jim.
That was some of my favorite promos. That was one of my favorite promos when I came back on him. I was like, you're such a savage, Randy. Why don't you snap into this?
Yeah, that's great stuff. And what did you enjoy most about your wrestling days, would you say?
Well, that run was just insane, you know, from... proving, like, there was promos that I did, and this is why people really gravitated to Diamond Dallas Page, the people who did. The people who gravitated to Diamond Dallas Page were hard workers, were people who were told, you can't do this or you can't do that, and then I did it. You know, I was one of those guys on the couch, just like you guys. I just happened to get off the couch, had a vision, manifested it into a reality. But along the way, heard from everyone, I was never going to be able to do it. It was never going to happen. And they were wrong. So I actually, there's times I was doing promos and I was working with Benoit that was around that area. And I would say, they said I'd never be a main eventer. They said I'd never be a top guy. They were wrong. And I was talking right to the booking committee. Everybody knows it. And it was real. And it was just like, hey, tell me what I can't do. I'll show you what I can do. So that, over that period, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, it was magical, man. It was, I was living on a lightning bolt. It was a great, it was an amazing time in my life. And, the road, being on the road, being on top of the world, but going so many places, and, you know, and it was just like, it was like being one of the Beatles, you know, no bullshit. You know, it was like, it wasn't the Beatles because nobody was bigger than them, but it was like being one of those guys, you know, as far as you got around people who really cared about our shit. It was crazy.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're running out of time a little bit here. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left. You got any final thoughts or anybody you want to give a shout out to?
Not really. I've done like 5 of these today, bro. I'm spent.
Well, I can definitely say you got a good marketing engine behind this because, I mean, I get a lot of emails about it, and I've seen it on other websites, the DDP Yoga. So it's definitely out there, and you got some real professionals working with you on it.
You know who those professionals are? Me. I have great opinion on the web end, but when it comes to promotions, it's all me. I grew up in a nightclub business. Every nightclub I ever ran was the hottest spot. The last place I ran was the hottest spot that hit Southwest Florida since the sun. It was called Norma Jean's, and I stopped running nightclubs and come into the wrestling business full time and take the gamble. But I was, 1985 to 88, or really from 84 to 89, I changed it. People were still talking about it in Fort Myers, Florida. Norma Jean's Dance Club. It was amazing. And I never had a real job in my life. I always did what I passionately followed. that's the way I live my life. I go with what I live and follow. And right now it just happens to be, you know, what I'm going to end my life with and run it all the way to the end, because DDP yoga keeps me young. I mean, I'm 55 now, and I challenge anyone who's listening to this to go to ddpyoga.com, go to the next to bottom video where you'll see how DDP overcomes his injuries or overcame his injuries. And I show you my body as far as neck and back through skills, x-ray. The bottom line is it's all there. And anybody who buys DDP yoga tonight, if you get it tonight or tomorrow and you put DDP talk, I will call you and actually talk to you about the program that you just bought.
Awesome. Well,
that sounds great.
Yeah. And we'll definitely keep in touch and keep plugging your website and all that. I'll throw up a link on our website to it and everything, and maybe we'll catch up with you later down the road.
You got it, boy. It's
all
been
right.
Your pleasure.
Good
night. DDP, I'll talk to you later.
All right, so that's our show, folks. And until next week, adios.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Over and out.